roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Mountain's Edge, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz, Ari's co-host. What's up, Goz?
What up?
Not much, man. Ready to get at this. How about that? We have UFC 252 on Saturday. Folks, don't forget, we're hosting a watch-along on Sportscaster. Sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. We'll remind you about that later on in the show. But basically, whether you order the pay-per-view or not, hang out with us. Watch along with us. 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific on Saturday. We'll probably be dipping in early. All right, we got that going on. And then, of course, there's some news to cover. Now, we do our show on Sportscaster on Wednesdays. So usually the turnaround from Wednesday to Thursdays can be a little difficult, but I think we accumulated enough news to definitely touch on that. And, of course, we'll give our final predictions. People can always watch and see what we do via the staff picks that are posted. I often get that question. Who do you like on Saturday? Look, if you can't get a hold of me, just go to staff picks. Every single event for the UFC and most of them for Bellator, we submit staff picks. And there you can see not only what I'm doing, Goz, Dan Tom especially, he's the fight analyst, Nolan King, he always seems to be at the top, Simon Simano, same thing, Morgan, Bond, two of the guys that are up for Journalist of the Year. Check it out. I highly encourage it. Shout out to Fada. I think she's up there in second or third as well. All right. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, August 13th.
Y caballeros, hablemos MMA con Danny Segura.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura here. Just wanted to drop in and tell you about a new show coming to MMA Junkie. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language podcast dedicated to all things professional fighting. On this show, we'll be covering the biggest news and topics of MMA, plus highlighting the most relevant stories happening in the growing Latin American scene. Hablemos MMA will also feature interviews with some of the best fighters, coaches, personalities, and experts in the game. You can find us every Monday on your favorite podcasting platform, starting July 27th. Talk to you then.
Let's get the news out of the way, Goz, and then we'll finish strong with UFC 252 talk. An interesting article. Now, no one's really taking credit, so there's no one on the byline, and I wanted to give them credit because it was pretty cool. There's a video. There's an article with a video that that accompanies it. It says, relive the top five UFC trilogies. So right away, my eyeballs rolled up in my head, which means I'm thinking. And I started going, well, I know there's Liddell Couture. And then you really got to put on your thinking hat because there's been more than Hughes just five. But you got to figure out what was he trying to get at. Yeah, Hughes with GSP was another one that I came up with.
Wait, you know the five?
No, I didn't know them. I had to look. Well, because I didn't know what his opinion was. Yeah. His or her. I don't know who wrote it. But it was a fun article. So, you know, rather than sit here and tell you what I did for 10 minutes. I did think of Hughes and GSP, and I did think of Couture and Liddell. I even had thought of Arlovsky and Sylvia, but I don't think they made the cut. But you want me to tell you how? But
they went four, didn't they, or something like that?
Yeah, because they fought once at one championship. And three in the UFC.
Sure.
They did?
No. You asked me, do you want me to tell you?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you asked me another question. All right, here's number five. Matt Hughes versus BJ Penn. That's I remember one. That because Penn came in. Wait, how'd this work out? Penn choked him. Yeah, Penn defeated Hughes. Oh, yeah, and then Hughes destroyed Penn. Okay. Mm-hmm. I remember there. And I remember one of them being in Anaheim for sure. And in that one, I thought BJ Penn was doing good. But wasn't this back when BJ gassed a little or something like that? Not to say Hughes wasn't a monster, but
Hughes was in his prime. Right. Remember, that's the one where he put him in the crucifix and was.
Yeah, that was in Anaheim. I was at that one. And then, but the first one was a quick chokeout. And then the last one, Penn got him in Detroit, Auburn Hills, Michigan. I've been in that arena as well. By then, I'd say at least Hughes was past his prime. I don't want to take anything away from Penn because we had basically a lightweight versus a welterweight. But they became good friends. Used to ride motorcycles together and everything. I mean, together, like on one motorcycle. Dominic Cruz versus Uriah Faber.
Yeah.
Faber won the first one, choked him. Cruz won the next two via decisions. And go ahead.
That was in WEC, right?
WEC was the first, yeah.
Like even old school WEC, right?
Then the next two were in the UFC 5 years apart. Cruz basically decisioned him, but he kept it standing, and his stand-up was just better than Faber's. Next up, George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes. So in this one, GSP actually was having a good time in first fight, and then he got submitted quickly. And then guess what? GSP learned from that. And I don't think ever lost again. Well, no, he lost to Matt Serra, but then never lost again. After that, GSP kicked him, head kicked him to win, I believe, the interim title. And then in UFC 79, GSP was already champ by then, if I'm not mistaken. He defeated via submission, armbarred him. So they armbarred each other. That was the third one. Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard.
That's a good one.
Yeah, pretty epic fights they had. The first one, Maynard kind of dominated Edgar, 30-27 across the board. The second one, in what could have been Maynard's crowning moment, he lost via a split draw. So Frankie Edgar got to keep the belt because he was the champ. Remember how I mentioned BJ Penn along the way? Edgar had beaten BJ Penn, but we all still thought Penn was very talented and could reacquire the belt. But at this moment in time, it was Maynard's shot. He lost 48-46 two times and then a 47-47 call. Or sorry, he lost 48-46. He won 48-46 and then somebody had it 47-47. But he almost put him out. What was it, round one or round two?
I think it was round one.
He knocked him down like four times, right?
Yeah. I think if you had six refs at the time, I think four of them would have stopped it.
Do you want me to deviate from this altogether and read you a cool story regarding that fight?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to require you to entertain the audience for about 15 seconds while I let the dog out.
All right. So I guess while George lets the dog out, just a quick reminder on Sportscaster, we are going to do a watch-along party. They're a lot of fun. If you haven't tuned into that, that means you haven't tuned into our Wednesday show, which is basically this show, except we always have a guest, and there's video as well. So you get to watch us do the show. You get to watch the guest. It's really fun, and there's nothing really required of you to do. Just go on Sportscaster. Go on there and watch. It's very, very easy. Look us up, MMA Junkie. It's the best.
Okay, I'm back. So this is totally unplanned, all right? But this kind of goes to a conversation I had with a coach after Pennington and Nunes. Remember that fight?
Yeah.
In Brazil, where Pennington was kind of done after round four, but she still went out. We also had something similar with Roshkoff and whoever beat him. I forget who that. Oh, well, Drysdale is what I meant to say, but I forgot who fought Roshkoff, for crying out loud. But anytime that comes up, I always see this story because I talked to a coach, but I asked the coach permission if I could tell the story when it was relevant. Now, it's not relevant now because it has nothing to do with a fighter not wanting to come out. A coach should have stepped in, throwing the towel. But I don't know if I've ever said this before, maybe even shared it with you, but I had asked a few coaches, what did you think of Pennington and the coach? And this is what Mark Henry told me. There was a fight I was cornering where one of my guys was down seven times. They said 3, but it was 7. This fighter I trained was the toughest guy I ever met in my life. I fought since I was 8. I'm almost 50, and I've been in the military, so I've seen a ton of tough guys, but this guy was the toughest I'd ever met. I was beyond close with this kid, like a little brother, and beyond close as a trainer, never missing one single sparring session, which had been in the thousands. And in those thousands sparring rounds, kickboxing, MMA, I'd never seen him rocked once. So when he went down 7 times and got up and was fighting a guy 25 pounds bigger, I tried to throw in the towel, but my good friend grabbed the towel out of my hand and stopped me. The fighter came back to the corner, a bloody mess, with a dazed look. But when I was started talking to him, you could tell he had a ton more in him, and there was no place he would want to go back to out there where he was dropped 7 times previously. He comes back and wins the round, slams this guy who had never been taken down and had one of the biggest comebacks in UFC history. He went on to have a 3rd fight. Same thing happened in the 1st round, and he knocked the guy out.
That's a cool story.
That was Mark Henry. Yeah. Telling me, and of course he's referencing when Maynard and Edgar fought the 2nd time. So remember how I said, didn't he knock him down 4 times? He says it was 7. I guess I gotta believe him. Mm-hmm. I thought it was 4, but there was some stumbling around and he kind of picked really himself up. He was messed up, right? But so then I told him, damn, I go, that's a great story. Even Pennington is in agreement with her coach. Because Pennington by then had done media which said, I agree with what my coach's decision was to send me back out. I was on the side of the coach. If she really wanted out, she could have told the ref, which is what Max Roshkoff did. Now once Nunes got that takedown in the 5th, I was expecting the towel to fly in. I knew she was done then. That was me telling the coach. The coach says, these 2 fights changed the man's life, and forever he was labeled as the toughest fighter and champion to have ever been in the UFC. Not only that, he still has a record for most defenses and will probably go into the Hall of Fame. If I threw that towel in, I would have changed his life forever. If Frankie or some of my other fighters told me that, I would immediately told the ref it's over. So if Frankie had told him I'm done, he would tell the ref it's over. But I have known other fighters that I've had in sparring. They get a little panicked and they say they can't go on, but I know that they're fine and they can do more rounds and they learn that they can push. Me or no one else knows Pennington or have the right to think we know her. Every circumstance is different. Up to the point she wasn't rocked once or dropped. The worst thing was the leg kicks. Remember Nunes was battering her with the leg kicks? And Nunes wasn't throwing as much. If Pennington went on to win, they would be writing today how our corner was the best corner to have ever trained a fighter. And that's when I told him, because at that time I didn't know yet. I go, oh shit, you were talking about Frankie. The 25 pounds threw me off. But it's true. Remember, Gray was a really big lightweight, and Frankie always walked around at his 158 or something like that, so he never even got over 160. So I tell him, good point. And she caught Nunes' chin a couple times. If she would have caught her with a counter hook, she may have rocked her. Nunes throws so many straights and kicks that leaves the chin open. But at the time, she's so fast and throws so hard, it's not easy to get off on her. Mark Henry writes back. Is this interesting or should I stop?
That's interesting.
Okay. Mark Henry writes back. When Frankie lost to Ortega, we decided we would fight in June or July. The co-main. Why did he go to that? Got canceled. And Dana called for Frank. I don't think that matters as much. And then we keep talking. He mentions Alvarez versus Gaethje. The doctor was probably trying to call the fight, and I knew Eddie was 100% fine, and I kept blocking the doctor. Remember that? We've referenced that, how he was bodying him like in football. So Stitch Duran has done that too on behalf of the fighter. I remember that. I'm glad he brought it up because I've been wanting to remember what fight that was in. I kept telling the doctor he was fine because I knew it was just a bump on his head. And he was fine, was a massive needed win for Eddie, especially with 2 fights left on his contract and lost to Connor. After the UFC, after the fight, the UFC cut man said, I did an amazing job. Eddie was fine. Of course, I didn't want Frankie to fight, but I knew Frankie would never say no. When I went in the octagon and Frankie lost, he knew exactly everything that had happened, was mentally there 100%. Anyway, I'm skipping around here. Thank He may not have been known for having that human heart. He wouldn't have the title defense record. He wouldn't have two of the biggest comebacks in UFC's history. He wouldn't be a lock for the Hall of Fame. And maybe his confidence wouldn't have been the same. Raquel wasn't in the same realm as Frankie as being hurt that night or with someone 20 to 25 pounds bigger. And then that's when I told him, can I share that first story you sent me regarding Frankie? He goes, yeah. He said I could. He did? I hope so.
Well, I'll say this. The truest thing that he said in all of that was every situation is different. Because the Raquel situation and the Frankie situation are two different ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Raquel's is more mental. They're in the middle of a break where that decision can be made. Frankie's is more on the spot. But I kind of disagree in the sense that just because he made it through doesn't mean that it was the right call, right? So there's times where, like, if I were to do something really bad but get away with it, it doesn't mean, oh, okay, then it was okay, right? I probably should have been stopped. That fight, I remember that. Oh, man. I'm kind of with him. I probably would have thrown the towel. I mean, Frankie was like, his legs were giving out. Remember, mm-hmm. he was stumbling about. I think I probably would have, because for sure he's concussed. He's pretty jacked up. So I think I would.
But a concussed fighter can still fight.
He can, but it doesn't mean it's safe. You know, it just depends on how you're looking at it.
Oh, well, like, stepping in the octagon isn't safe.
Well, yeah, we know that. But there's different levels of safety in a fight, right? Like if you have a giant gash over your eye, just because jumping into the octagon isn't safe. I mean, there's just different levels, right? So if your fighter's stumbling about, he's definitely concussed and things can get even worse. I mean, he had that intuition to do it. I probably would have done it, but he didn't. And Frankie recovered and got away with it. But I don't know, just because he got away with it means that it was the right call.
I'm positive. I'm going to be honest with the audience right now. I asked him right here, and I'm looking in the exchange, and I don't see a yes from him. But I'm positive that I must have not copy-pasted it all over, because he told me that. I really try and pride myself on, you know, what's what. That's why I asked the question, you know what I mean? But now I'm going to have to reach out to him today and go, hey, by the way. But anyway, I asked him, who was the one that stopped you from throwing in the towel? He said, Ricardo Almeida.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, he said, I knew my fighter basically had another gear in him. I know there was danger. But he was a tough SOB, and it changed his life. Now, he was already champion, but what he went on to do was have the title defenses. Yeah. And then with the title defenses comes the lucrative pay-per-view bonus and all that shit. So he was actually on Pennington's coach's side, and I think he's basically always going to be on the side of coaches that will still be willing to send their fighter out there, because the coach knows them best and they have the best observation for 60 seconds, whether it's in between a round or as they're watching it. Now, granted, if the ref does it, then it's out of their hands. But
yeah,
and I'm kind of with those guys too. I'm not always the first one to go stop the fight, like Adrian mm-hmm. in Rocky II. But anyway, all right. Sorry there for the drifting off. But yeah, we go from Edgar and Maynard to Couture and Liddell was the other one that was left off.
I thought we started with that one.
No, I had mentioned it.
Oh, okay.
But the writer here, who again, we don't know who it was. I'll do the countdown one more time real fast. He said Hughes and Penn. He or she said that. Cruz versus Faber. GSP versus Hughes. Edgar versus Maynard. Liddell versus Couture. All of them were pretty epic.
Sense. Yeah.
For sure. I think they all involved title fights. Yeah. All right. Moving on here, Dana White is saying there's mutual interest in Floyd wanting to fight. All right, so what does that mean? We know Floyd wants to fight. He makes a ton of money when he does it. Dana's saying there's mutual interest, so obviously maybe there's a UFC fighter involved. However, at the end of the article, he goes on to say, Conor McGregor's retired, because that's the first person everyone went back to.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that leave? Habib, Masvidal. I don't know who that leaves, honestly. I don't know if there's anybody else.
It's one of those two.
Masvidal's big, man.
I'm sorry. The third one would be Amanda Nunes. I think I could
against
see.
Floyd?
Not against Floyd. I'm just saying, if they were to take a UFC fighter and make him box again. Because remember, Floyd is a fighter and he wants to fight, but he's also a promoter. So when they say they want to work together, I'm sure it's not just let's bring Floyd into a fight. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it could just be a Floyd Mayweather promotion thing, right?
Yeah.
So,
but they, here, this one says Floyd wants to fight.
He wants to fight, yeah.
Yeah.
But for him to fight an MMA guy, there's only two options. It's Habib and Masvidal. After that, I seriously doubt there's anybody else that could fit that bill.
Me too.
I mean, obviously there's Conor, but like you just said, Conor is retired, right? And that's kind of hard to stomach a second fight of that, I think.
Yeah.
So
those are your options. Really don't want to see Habib versus Floyd either.
I don't either. That to me, that's silly.
Now, if Habib were to retire, let's say Habib beats Gaethje and then goes, "I'm retired." And he says, "I'm going back to Dagestan and I'm just going to be with my family or whatever." And in 2 years he fought Floyd, I'd have no problem with it. It's kind of like, I feel like it'd be like an exhibition. Mm-hmm. All right, have some fun, you know? But here now, if he retains against Gaethje, no. If you got a camp in you and you're gearing for Floyd, no. You start paying attention to the 55ers that are out there that are chasing. You know what I mean? Because enough already. We cannot put titles just on hold for that, for the purpose of the UFC making money. At that point, then grab the really retired Conor McGregor and just let him do it. I would think.
You'd imagine.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all. You know, we've kind of done this dance like two or three times. And folks, let it be known. Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fought in August of 2017. Right now, we're in 2020. Guess what month? August. It's literally been 3 years since Floyd competed and was pretty much an exhibition bout, though it technically went on his record. And
on his 50-0.
On his 50-0, yeah.
It counts just like everyone else. He fought a guy who
never fought anyone else.
How stupid is that?
That was dumb.
I'm sorry. That should have gone down as an exhibition or
something.
It
should have.
Even if they do put it on your record.
Two guys had 49-0, right? Calzaghe and Marciano, or just Marciano?
I know Calzaghe did, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just don't get how he can be proud of that particular win. It can't count the way the other ones do. Like, if I were him, I probably would have gone to 51-0 just to really make it feel good. But, yeah, a guy that's never boxed
before. That means he'd have to go against Crawford or Spence, unless he just kind of grabbed, you know, someone else who wasn't a top guy and said, "Hey, let's you and I."
But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You could do that, right? Like, picture Usain Bolt. He's got all these records, right? But he just needs one more, and he goes, "Hey, who's really fast in the NFL? I'll race you," and that counts. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Not the same thing.
I agree. So, just letting you know, folks, it's been talked about. What they could do, I don't know. Floyd walks around at about between 150 and 155. Walks around. Masvidal walks around at, I mean, even now that he's kind of staying in shape, 185-ish, I think. I think he's just too big. Maybe they could meet at 160. I think Masvidal could make it to 160 to box. So I think Habib's probably the more likely. Who knows?
Habib is what they want, and probably Abu Dhabi, I imagine, is where they would want to have it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Dave Doyle wrote an article on why Pretty Face Paige VanZant signing with Bare Knuckle isn't so crazy. See, I thought Dave was right. It was crazy for writing that article. But he explains the business side. So he says, "Hey, look, this chick is pretty popular. And from Bare Knuckle side, if they're paying, but they're going to get back." And then he points to Malianaji versus Loboff and how big that got. So looking at it as a business transaction, if Paige can work to that, you know, towards that type of a fight where there's,
you need a dance pay-per-view partner,
sales and stuff like that, then it looks like it might be good for both parties. Paige has already said, "I don't mind if I get scars in my face," because this is the one sport that's going to cut her up the most. Now, I looked at it when we talked about it on Sportscaster, or with Sportscaster on Wednesdays, but I believe maybe on our other show, Triple G Show with Richard Hunter, I was mentioning that I just don't think Paige has the adequate hands, you know, to go in there and fight. Like Beck Rawlings, we can say whatever we want about her MMA game, but her boxing's pretty nice. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So what's going to happen? I don't even know if Beck Rawlings is still there. I don't think she is.
No, I think she kind of had a little bit of a falling out with them.
Yeah.
The first thing that jumped to my mind, because you're right, she needs a dance partner, is didn't we have an interview with Elie Malay? And didn't she say at one point, I want to do bare knuckle, but like at the end or something like that?
Yeah. Now, Scott Coker's pretty flexible, but I don't know if he would let her.
But I'm just thinking of anybody that's possible where you could actually sell something like you brought up Malignaggi, something like that, him and Lobov, because you need a dance partner and you need a pretty damn good one because Paige is just nice. She's sweet. She's not really that type of, she's not going to do the trash talking that you saw in Lobov and Malignaggi.
Yeah, I don't know what they got planned, but they must have tracked her and done their studies on her and just said, hey, look, if we just put her on the card, this thing can sell. So, yeah, we'll pay her a ton of money, but guess what? We'll make a ton of it back. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. All right. I believe, basically, as far as news, the only other thing I wanted to cover was Luke Rockhold says he's back. He wants Chris Weidman. And Luke Rockhold, I guess some people were looking at him as possibly retired. Ever since he fought Weidman in December of 2015, he fought once in 2016, once in 2017, once in 2018, once in 2019. He wants to get one in 2020. He's recovering from a torn labrum and rotator cuff surgery. So basically, he hasn't fought much. It's just once per year after beating Chris Weidman. That includes the loss to Bisping, the win over Branch, and losses to Romero and Blachowicz. Blachowicz was at light heavyweight. So light heavyweight campaign was unsuccessful. And then as a middleweight, he's 1-2 since the loss, or since beating Weidman. Weidman, we've talked about his struggles. He had lost 5 of 6 before he came back and won. So the pairing, I like it, actually. Granted, one guy's coming off a win and one guy's coming off a loss, but they're still both names. And Weidman may be like, yeah, I'd like to get that fool back, the one that beat me for my title. So even though I'm coming off a win, he's coming off a loss, I'm interested in dancing. What do you think?
I don't like it.
What?
I like the Vettori matchup.
Oh. Okay.
I think that one makes sense.
Vettori against Weidman.
Weidman.
Okay.
I like that matchup better because, for one, Vittori's been calling for it. He's been calling to fight anybody, and for some reason, nobody wants to fight that dude. This is a perfect fight. I think it's really good. You could spin it on the Weidman side, and you can spin it on the Vettori side. On the Vettori side, you could say, hey, man, he needs that kind of like that signature win over a good, crafty veteran. And I think if you're Weidman, you could spin it where you could say, hey, man, he's on his way to being back, and this is a tough, hungry lion that nobody wanted to face. Let's beat this guy. So I just think it's perfect. I think it's good stylistically. I wouldn't put that fight together.
Fair enough. All right. I wouldn't be against Vettori and Weidman.
If Weidman gets a win over Rockhold, everybody's just going to say, well, Rockhold was retired. He's not really into it anyway, right? If he beats Vettori, I think people are going to go, that's an established dude. That's a tough cat. That's a good out for him.
But remember, you're Weidman.
Yeah.
And you have a nice man cave with a belt. And, you know, you're fairly popular, I guess. And then they go, hey, guess what? I got your next fight booking. And he rubs his hands together. What you got? We got Marvin Vettori. Now, this isn't a shot at Marvin Vettori. This is Chris Weidman talking. You know he's probably going to go, come on. You know what I mean? I'm a former champion. A lot of those former champions, a lot of those established veterans, they don't like to look behind them and give that guy a chance. Now, they should because someone gave Weidman a chance. I think Munoz probably was the one that gave Weidman a chance. I remember when Munoz was on a tear, he fought Weidman. Weidman won, and that propelled Weidman even closer, you know, to the title shot. So that it happens in everyone's career, but some fighters just, it's difficult to convince them of that. Now, granted, he just took the Akhmedov fight, and I would say Vettori's probably a bigger name than Akhmedov. So maybe he's seen this already, and maybe I'm painting Weidman as some sort of an elite or something like that when he really isn't. So it's possible, Goes, and I would be down with it.
Okay,
but I'd also be down with Rockhold and Weidman. It just seems like, not that there's bad blood. Like Weidman says, he's kind of been talking smack, but I don't remember seeing too much out of Weidman in that regard. Anyway, Last thing, there was one more thing, and then we'll get to UFC 252. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, here's a quote from him. I'm right there in regards for being in a title shot if he beats Junior Dos Santos.
He's wrong.
Right. No, Jairzinho, you're not right there. Francis Ngannou's right there. He's going to be involved one way or another in the next heavyweight title fight. And you got to believe there's people ahead of Jairzinho Rozenstruik, because Jairzinho Rozenstruik just lost. So if he gets back this win, it'll take him to 11-1. That's a nice record. 5-1 in the UFC, that's a nice record. But he'd be 1-1 in his last two. You got guys like Derek Lewis, who's won 3 in a row. Curtis Blades, he's won, I think, 4 in a row since losing to Ngannou. So I just don't see that being the case.
Actually,
and then don't forget that
way off.
And don't forget that if Stipe loses, Stipe's probably going to have to take one fight and then fight for the title again because he's got amazing accolades. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk UFC 252. UFC 252 is on Saturday, and it's August 15th to be exact, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for the main card. You got prelims that start somewhere in the 6 Eastern, 3 p.m. range. Check it out. The main card, though, is what I want to talk about, because that's kind of like the meat and potatoes of the card, obviously. We got the title fight. I looked, and it's not as sexy as some of the other pay-per-views. It's taken some hits. This was supposed to have Edgar versus Munoz at one time. At least it was rumored. Trust me, it could use it. It just lost Kutalaba and Ankalov.
It's on the main card. That was the first fight, I think.
Yeah. Like, when people are saying, like, this card's not that great, I'm like, I always want to tell people, well, shut up. They usually come through. We usually have some excitement. There's KOs and subs. Just tune in. We got a belt. But I understand, you know, it compared to, like, the last one in Yas Island with the 3 title fights, and then the one in Jacksonville also had, I think, 2 title fights. 3? I forget. But, I can see how people get a little spoiled.
But there's all kinds of drama revolving the co-main and main event.
Correct.
I think that's... I hear everybody.
But O'Malley and Vera, are they co-main event status fighters? They're not.
No.
It's O'Malley's popularity and possible trajectory. So I see the savvy but hardcore fan is going, take it easy. You know, that's like Masvidal and Askren. Ooh, they got heat. Let's put them third. And mm-hmm. then we still got the co-main and the main. O'Malley and Vera is not co-main event
status. I agree on paper. But to make up for that, they're bringing a lot of heat to that fight.
Yeah. So and it's going to be a good fight. I know it's going to be a good
fight. It's going to be a good scrap.
Yeah. All right. So... the one thing I'll do, which is what I plan on doing every pay-per-view, is reminding you, Mike Bond puts together a really, really nice article called UFC 252 Pre-Fight Facts. Stipe Miocic makes history with third straight Daniel Cormier fight. Check it out. There's a lot of fun facts on a lot of the fighters involved on the fight card on Saturday. Here's a few. It's actually the headline. Stipe Miocic is the first fighter, goes, to fight the same opponent 3 times in a title fight.
In a title fight?
Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting, right?
Yeah.
I guess every other time there has to be like an opponent in between, or it wasn't for a title.
I wonder if there's that, but if there wasn't a title involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think probably. But it says Miocic becomes the first in history to face the same opponent in 3 consecutive UFC fights. Miocic is one of 4 heavyweight champions in UFC history to have multiple reigns. Miocic's 5 UFC title victories are tied with Tim Sylvia for second most in divisional history behind Randy Couture at 6. What that means is he won the title twice, so those aren't title defenses. He beat Werdum and he beat Cormier. And then aside from that, he had 3 title defenses. That's why he's got 5 title fight victories, but only 3 title defenses. Miocic's 3 consecutive UFC heavyweight title defense during his first reign were the most of any champion in divisional history. That's why many say he's the GOAT. Miocic's 13 victories in UFC competition are tied for 5th most in divisional history behind Andrei Arlovsky at 18, Frank Mir at 16, JDS and Derek Lewis at 15. Miocic's 9 knockout victories in UFC heavyweight competition are tied for 4th most in divisional history behind Lewis 11, Dos Santos 10, Cain Velasquez 10.
That's pretty cool.
Let's do some Cormier stats real fast. Cormier is one of 4 simultaneous 2-division champions in the UFC. Conor McGregor, Amanda Nunes, Henry Cejudo also accomplished the feat. So that means they were champs at the same time. There's 7 of them. There's 7 champs in the history of the UFC, except the other 3 weren't champions at the same time. Those would be GSP. Remember, he came out of retirement. He had already given up the welterweight strap, came back to be Bisping. BJ Penn, he was a lightweight champ and a welterweight champ, but not at the same time. And then Randy Couture, light heavyweight and heavyweight, but again, not simultaneous. Cormier is one of 3 fighters in UFC history to record successful title defenses in 2 weight classes. Cejudo and Nunes also accomplished the feat. What does that mean? That Conor McGregor was the one simultaneous champ that never defended. He actually never defended his champ belts in Cage Warriors either. That's why when you come to an argument, when you come to the table and say, Conor McGregor is the greatest ever, you better be talking about the gates he produced, the pay-per-views that he sold,
the impact he had,
the impact, the knockouts, the trash talk, whatever. Because when it gets to title defenses, you may want to take a drink of water or step aside and say, I got to take a call. Because that's where your argument will fall apart. You know. But if your other criteria is more important to you, then hey, have at it. You know, it's a subjective subject for sure. Cormier is one of 5 fighters in UFC history to win a belt while coming off a loss. He accomplished the feat against Anthony Johnson at UFC 187. His is a little complicated because of those fights with John Jones, a no contest, a loss, moving around. He's going to have different fun facts like that. Cormier is one of 2 fighters in UFC history to win 2 title fights following a loss or no contest. Couture also accomplished the feat. Cormier competes in the 17th bout of his career. Hang on a second. In the 17th heavyweight bout of his career, he's 15-1. In the weight class, Cormier lands 62.9% of his significant strike attempts in UFC heavyweight competition, 3rd best rate in divisional history behind Alistair Overeem, 74%, and Anthony Hamilton. Remember him, Goose? 65.6%.
65.6.
The odds on this fight are Cormier comes in as a slight favorite at -115, Stipe Miocic -105. If you're wondering about the co-main event, Sean O'Malley's -280, Marlon Vera +240. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit too much.
For O'Malley?
Yeah.
O'Malley's popular. I think if he wasn't so popular.
170.
I was going to say 200, but I could accept 170. We think he should be. I mean, look, he's undefeated. And he's looked pretty good, honestly. It's not like Vera's not coming off. I mean, he had a nice run, but what I think his last fight was a loss.
What helps him is he's still improving and he's looking better.
But he's tough. He's tough and scrappy. Yeah. Rosenstruck -135. Junior Dos Santos +115 to finish out the main card. John Dodson or Merab Dvalishvili -240. John Dodson +200. What got promoted to main card? It was the Burns fight, right?
Yeah. Herbert Burns.
Herbert Burns is -280. Daniel Pineda +240. Herbert Burns said Daniel Pineda is a tougher matchup than Alex Volkanovski. Take it easy, Herbert Burns.
No, he's crazy.
Yeah. Jim Miller's back. Vince Pichel's back,
that's
too.
That's going to be a fun fight.
Two of my favorites. Yeah. -125 for Pichel, +105 for Jim Miller.
I think that fight might be quick, though.
Lavinia Souza -165. Ashley Yoder. We talked to Yoder about 2 months ago. She's at +145.
Mm-hmm.
Felice Herrig's back, She's a big dog, though. Verna Jandaroba -310. Felice Herrig +255.
Her book just came out. The one she was talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just came out. If you guys have kids, buy that book. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. TJ Brown -150. Danny Chavez +130. And Parker Porter -120 versus Chris Daukaus +100. They lost the Ion Kutulaba Ankalaw fight. And Kai Kamaka is facing Tony Kelly. I don't find odds on that, though. So there you have it, folks. Saturday, we'll be watching. We're going to do a watch-along on Sportscaster. Sportscaster is SPORTS, just like sports. Caster, though, is C-A-S-T-R. No E in Caster. Sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. Join us on Saturday. You'll see a lot of tweets, retweets, and shares and stuff. Posts on Facebook reminding you to come out and hang out with us, whether you get the pay-per-view or not. But especially if you don't, we're going to be your eyes and ears, and we're going to tell you what we're watching. So it's just like somebody tuning in on the old Philco radio, as Dennis Hopper said in the movie Hoosiers. Yeah, I listened to that game on that little Philco. He was talking about a radio brand. The movie Hoosiers, his son's out there playing the state championship or the semifinals, and Dennis Hopper's character is basically in one of them loony bins. I shouldn't say that. He was drinking. He had a drinking problem, right? Mm-hmm. So he was in the hospital, and he was able to catch the game. Yeah, he was trying out. He was able to catch the game on that little Philco. We're going to be your little Philco. We're going to tell you everything that's going on. Now, look, it's not paper play-by-play and color commentary till the end. Then that's when we really get into it. It's just two dudes having fun, drinking beer, eating pizza, watching the fights.
What's your final prediction for that fight, the main event?
Look, Cormier finished him in the first fight, and I know Miocic got him in the second fight. It's amazing to me that Cormier and his team weren't able to somehow come up with a counter to that body shot. I could have sworn it got into the teens, at least 13, 15, whatever. Trust me, they're going to have a counter to that one now. But before that, I thought Cormier was just kind of, I don't want to say having his way, but on his way to winning the belt against Stipe Miocic. So if not for that adjustment should be comeback of the year at the World MMA Awards. But if not for that, I mean, honestly, the guy could beat 2-0. And plus, Cormier says he's going to work on that wrestling, get a little bit more wrestling down. But as he says that, look, don't discount Stipe Miocic. He also wrestled. He wrestled in the collegiate level at Cleveland State along with my man,
Gerald Harris.
But he didn't wrestle to the level, the international level, the Olympic level like Daniel Cormier. So one guy's wrestling is better than the other. But one guy's also a lot older, been through some injuries. So I don't know. As long as Miocic can stop the takedowns, then Olympic status goes out the window. They're back to throwing hands. But again, Cormier looks nice when he throws hands as well, when he kicks. So I'm going with Cormier. Yeah, I know. I'm a Cormier homer. But still, I give respect to Miocic. Right now, I say Miocic is the greatest of all time going into the fight. And if he comes out of it with his hand raised, he solidifies it. But if he loses to Cormier, I think Cormier might have that GOAT status. Others would argue, well, what about Cain? What about Verdum? What about Fedor? What about Coleman? What about Couture? What about Fry? Whatever. They all have some amazing stats. Maybe we'll dedicate one show just to breaking down the heavyweights. But for now, I think it's down to these two.
I'm going to go Cormier too, but what I will say about this fight is I don't think it goes the distance, and I think it ends somewhere between rounds 3 and 4. I think those first two fights took something out of both of the guys. Yeah. And to think that that it's going to go later, I just don't see that.
And I hear you're picking a prediction, an upset in the co-main?
I'm picking Marlon Vera.
Yeah. What about gun to the head, though?
Marlon Vera.
Really, a hitman walks in and goes, all right, enough fucking around. I'm tired of your jibber-jabber. This gun is not moving from your temple. The fight's about to start. Who do you got, kid?
Yeah. I'm going to...
Really?
Yeah, because...
I think I might go with O'Malley.
Here's the thing. When fighters ask for a guy, when they really, really chase someone down, I think there's a reason for it. I think there's something he sees in O'Malley that he thinks he can exploit. And, dude... Coloring your hair like that, that's like a slap in the face. That probably gave Marlon Vera a little extra incentive to get this done.
And was that episode 3 or 2?
On episode 2, I think they show him doing it, but he had already done it.
I know 3 was published. I don't think I've seen 3. Yeah. I got to catch up a little bit. I'm posting them on Facebook to get the casual crowd familiar.
That's something that's going to really motivate Vera. So... I got Vera in this one, man. I really do. I think what he's going to do is just put too much pressure on Sean O'Malley.
A gun to the head, huh?
Gun to the head, yeah.
All right. Gun to the head, I think I'd go with O'Malley. But yeah, I'll be cheering for Vera, and I'll be betting on Vera. Because I think it's close. It's just O'Malley's really tall, and like they say, long. He just has really, really a nice reach. He's got fluid strikes. He's got a lot of confidence. Vera also is confident, very, very good, but it seems like Vera, every time he's moved up to try and fight someone on that next level, he's gotten checked. In fact, I'm going to pull it up really quick because I don't want to talk out of my ass. Vera is coming up a lot. Yeah, he's got that Song Yadong. He had beaten Andre Uhl, Noeline Hernandez, Frankie Sines, Guido Canetti, Luigi Buren. I mean, that's a five-fight win streak. It's in the UFC. All of them were finishes. But are any of those guys still in the UFC? Maybe Sines just fought, so we know he is. He just turned 40, by the way. I don't know if the other guys are. Like, you know what I mean? When he fought John Lineker, he lost. He did beat Kelleher, Brad Pickett. I mean, respect, man. He's a veteran. He's been in the sport for a while. He's got some bonuses. I'm glad he's making some money. I thought he beat Song Yadong.
I thought so, too.
So, really, it's close. All right. Maybe you have me convinced that you're not the craziest guy ever, but I'm going to bet him, but I don't know about gun to the head.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, folks. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And don't forget, if you want more of Junkie Radio than just what you're getting on the podcast Mondays and Wednesdays, 9 Pacific, noon Eastern, we do the same show but in the video format on Sportscaster, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie, the same place we're sending you to on Saturday for the watch-along. We also do a Junkie Radio on Wednesdays at Sportscaster, the same time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That one's live. We usually have a guest. And it's on video. Michael Chandler joined us yesterday. And if you're thinking, oh, man, sounds like they've had some cool guests, you can go back to that page right now and check out John McCarthy, Calvin Kattar, Michael Chandler, Bruce Buffer. So they're all there. They're all housed and ready to go, kind of like a YouTube channel. You can check them out right there and enjoy them. In fact, I was already getting a lot of people really loved the last two with Buffer and Chandler. So I'm happy. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Enjoy your week. Don't forget to tune in to all the coverage that we have, including the weigh-ins tomorrow, all the face-offs, all that stuff will be up on Junkie on Saturday. Don't forget to check out the pre-fight facts by Mike Vaughn, all the good stuff we throw up. The whole team is working hard all day Saturday. We'll have amazing coverage, and then that watch along with Goz and I, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. We'll see you then. Until then, though, be a champion.